T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track 4 games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
The McNeil and Parkin Show. Afternoons on The Score.
I grew up watching Michael on TV, and now you got a chance to go face to face with him. You get a chance to really see and like touch and feel strength, speed, quickness. And it was fun to be out there.
I just want to get to the offensive end and go one on one. Gonna make his ass work down
here. He's making out. We got to get back.
He hauling ass.
I ain't trying to be down there on a poster, dog. I ain't jumping with him.
The McNeil and Parkin Show on 670 The Score.
Thanks for hanging out, Mob. It's Mac and Parkins on The Score. Hubarkish. We'll shoot down my football theories coming up at 4 o'clock. Dr. Rob Sitrenberg joins us to talk coronavirus and where we go from here at 4:30. Matt Spiegel at 5 o'clock. Mac off today, so I'm flying solo with Shep and Tanny. So I guess I'm never really solo as long as three-quarters of the Mob hanging out today. But the documentary, The Last Dance, continues to get awesome ratings, and we spent a lot of time on it yesterday. But one thing we did not get into was Kobe Bryant. And Tanny made the point earlier that it was pretty powerful stuff and we probably should have. And there were a lot of things we should have done on yesterday's show, but he's right. We did not get to that. And it was poignant to see him, obviously, given the tragedy and the finality of his unexpected death. But also, so much of the conversation, and I admit to doing it on this show too, is it's hard not to compare eras. And when you watch these highlights, or when you were watching NBC Sports Chicago air those Bulls games from the 90s, marvel at the fact that the game is different. Now, personal preference, if you want to make an argument for better or worse, that's totally fine. And I know most Chicagoans will favor their nostalgia and say that it was better then than it is now. Totally reasonable. Totally fine to feel that way. I was a child of the 90s Bulls as well. But it leads to a lot of conversations. And this is unique to basketball. It's part of the barbershop culture of basketball. It's part of the pantheon of one-on-one debates. Like, the sport can literally be played one-on-one. Can't play baseball one-on-one. Can't play football one-on-one. But you can play basketball one-on-one. So who would win, right? Dr. J against Magic Johnson, Magic against Larry, Larry against Isaiah, Isaiah against Jordan, Jordan against Kobe, Kobe against LeBron, like where they all fit. Who's the best center of all time? Who's the best small forward of all time? Rankings of top 20 players, top 50 players. Like, that's what the sport does. It lends itself to those debates. And then you start debating across eras. And could the 90s Bulls lock down the 2015 Warriors? And it's impossible to answer because we'll never see it, and time travel does not exist yet. But we all fall into those conversations at some point or another, I think, if you love the NBA. But Kobe made a very eloquent point that probably should not go unmentioned, and here it is.
It was a rough couple years for me coming to the league, because at the time, the league was so much older. It's not as young as it is today. So nobody was really thinking much of me. I was a kid that shot a bunch of air balls, you know what I mean? And at that point, Michael provided a lot of guidance for me. Like, I had a question about shooting this turnaround shot, so I asked him about it. And, you know, he gave me a great detailed answer. But on top of that, he said, if you ever need anything, give me a call. It's like my big brother. You know, I truly hate having discussions about who would win one-on-one. And you're a fan saying, hey, Kobe, you beat Michael one-on-one. I feel like, yo, what you get from me is from him. I don't get five championships here without him because he guided me so much and gave me so much great advice.
It's such a great point. And anybody who grew up watching Kobe, people around Shep, Tanny, and I's age, I talked about it when Kobe died. It's probably the sports death or celebrity death even that affected me the most because I remember Kobe Bryant as a rookie and we knew him as, from the prom and Lower Merion and going to the Lakers and the fro and the air balls and Kobe and Shaq. And we saw the whole arc of the career and he was, and still to this day is, the closest thing that basketball has seen to Michael Jordan since Jordan. Jordan and LeBron are the two best ever, but they're different, right? LeBron is more Magic, and Kobe was more Jordan. In terms of just mannerisms, Kobe modeled everything. He modeled how he talked to the press. He modeled how he would wear his suits to the games. He modeled the turnaround jumper, the footwork, the Mamba mentality, the killer instinct. It was Jordan to a T. There's no I in team, but there is a M-E in that MF-er. Like the story that Shaq told at his funeral. Michael Jordan talking about him being his little brother at the memorial service for Kobe at the Staples Center. You heard Kobe in that documentary talk about him as his big brother. And that's the thing about basketball that is so beautiful is the game passes down and each generation adds to it as sports science and training and technology and athleticism, as everything evolves and improves and adapts, you take what the previous generation had and you add to it. And it's very clear that Kobe took that from Jordan. And I was looking for this morning because it reminded me of it. This is maybe my favorite quote that LeBron has ever given. He was asked in an interview, for an ESPN, the magazine feature back in 2012, 2013, about his killer instinct compared to Kobe's killer instincts. Because remember, Kobe's still in the league. This is post-Kobe Shaq, but Kobe's doing his thing, and he's winning with Powell, and we're wondering if we're ever going to get a Kobe-LeBron final. And LeBron had won, but he hadn't won on the level that he'd won now. And there was always that comparison of like, how, you're closing. LeBron is a closer. LeBron is a killer. Why can't you be more like Mike? Why aren't you more like Kobe? And this is what LeBron said to ESPN in 2013. There are different ways to hunt. I watch the Discovery Channel all the time, and you look at all of these animals in the wild, and they all hunt a different way to feed their families. They all kill a different way. Lions do it strategically. Two females will lead, and then everybody else will come in. Hyenas will just go for it. There are different ways to kill, and I don't think people understand that. Everybody wants everybody to kill the same way. Everybody wants everyone to kill like MJ or kill like Kobe. Magic didn't kill the way they killed. Does that mean he didn't have a killer instinct? Kareem didn't either. But does that mean Kareem didn't have a killer instinct? The same with Bird. That doesn't mean you don't have a killer instinct. Tim Duncan don't kill like Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant, but I've played against Tim Duncan twice in the finals, and I know for sure he's got a killer instinct. So there are different ways to kill. MJ had a killer instinct for sure, but if people really think that MJ didn't talk to nobody and didn't smile on the court, they're crazy. They're crazy. I've seen him. I was watching a clip the other day of him blocking Charles Barkley, and they're laughing about the play on the floor. Right now, if I block Kevin Durant on the floor, or I block Carmelo Anthony, and we laugh about it, oh man, I'm going to get killed. I'm telling you, but there are different ways of killing. And that was the quote to ESPN, and it was great. Because he was like, I'm being me, and I go about it more like Magic. And that was who LeBron, like, he was influenced by Jordan. He was too young to really watch it, but his game 6'9", point forward, ball in his hands, always like the basketball computer brain, right? He would make the, he always was making the calculation. Me double teamed fading away, not as high percentage as a lesser player wide open in the corner. I'm throwing it to the lesser player, but then if the lesser player misses, that lesser player doesn't get criticized. I get criticized for passing him the ball, even though it was the smart basketball play at the time. That's a Magic Johnson thing. As we've seen in this documentary, Jordan got there eventually, but it took him a long time. LeBron had that from his rookie year on, and people perceived that as weakness in LeBron, whereas really it was just he was the next generation of Magic Johnson and Kobe was the next generation of Michael Jordan. And I love that stuff. I love that stuff about the NBA. So like for me, I don't take it as an insult to the 90s Bulls to talk about this era of basketball and be like, man, Jordan would be great today, but he wouldn't have the athletic edge over these modern athletes that he had over those athletes because these modern athletes have all of the advantages that he didn't have. Now, if Jordan had those advantages and if Jordan came up in an era of three-point shooting, it would be different. But that's when you get into unanswerable questions. So like, I don't think saying that the best player of the most recent era is the guy right now. Like Jordan was the best of his era. Magic was the best of his. Kareem was the best of his. Wilt was the best of his. LeBron is the best of his. And that's just how it goes. And I thought that respect that Kobe showed was beautiful. And you could tell like that he patterned everything after Jordan. And that was Jordan's legacy in a huge way. Because he had that impact on Harold Miner. Like, he had that impact on Jason Richardson. He had that impact on so many guys who just didn't have the talent that Kobe had. So Kobe had basically the exact same talent as Jordan. He had the same killer instinct and mentality. And then because of circumstance of his era, being teamed with Shaq, he was the second best player on some title teams, whereas Jordan was always the best. And he was in the West, and Jordan was in the East. And it was just, there were differences of eras. But was Kobe Bryant really much worse at basketball than Michael Jordan? No. Just basically the same guy, different era, little different set of circumstances, but totally influenced by one another. Tanny, I know that moment in the documentary stood out to you. What did you take away from it all?
Yeah, well, first of all, you know, I don't know how you felt when Kobe first popped up on the screen. That's quite a way to start episode five. But when you first see Kobe and you're still upset about it, you know, like you see him up there and you're like, oh, this should be a guy that should be talking about this era and his era and basketball. You know, until, you know, if for another 25 years at least, you know, so you see Kobe and you're immediately drawn in. That was a great way that they put that right at the beginning. But yeah, it's all about connectivity, right? I'm big on that. And not just with basketball, even though, like you said, basketball does sort of lend itself to that more so than other sports do, but connectivity in all aspects of life. Like everyone is impacted or affected by people that came before them. You know, either you're trying to emulate them or you're doing things the exact opposite way they did them, but you're learning from them regardless. So I like to think that, you know, the connection between Jordan to Kobe and then Kobe to LeBron and then LeBron with whoever is going to be the next man, if it's going to be Zion, whoever it's going to be. But that's the beauty of sports and life in general. And it's funny you were talking about things and nutrition getting better. I mean, Jordan was just talking about it in that one clip when him and Pippen are drinking Miller Lights after the game, and Jordan was confirming all the stories that Terry Borst told all these years about during halftime, players and coaches were smoking cigarettes. You know,
right.
That was only like two basketball generations removed from where we are now. So to think that things aren't getting for the better, that's ridiculous. Like, you know, and then Jordan saying, of course, that, you know, a lot of times players got them from the coaches. It's like, what an archaic thing to do during a professional sports atmosphere. But yeah, I love, you know, it goes with music and sports and everything we do. I'm sure as a radio host, you're influenced by people that came before you. Probably the guy that's on the show with us, you know, I'm sure there's traits of him that,
of course,
that you've carried with you, you know? So yeah, it's with every aspect of life. And I just love it when people aren't, you know, scared to acknowledge it. And I'm glad Kobe was able to not, you know, admit it, but get it on tape for the whole world to hear before his untimely passing.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing is it's totally natural to have nostalgia for like the era that shaped you, right? Depending on your age, oh, that music was the best. Those comedies were the funniest. That basketball was the best. That every generation for the history of forever. Oh, that was my favorite era of The Score. Those were the best hosts at the station. Like, that's natural. Like, you hit people in like their formative years or when they needed it most in their life, like whether they cared about sports the most or they were at a particularly tough place or they were spending time. Like, those things are all subjective. Like, there's, oh, the greatest of all time. Well, what's to say that it's not Bill Russell who won the most championships or Kareem Abdul-Jabbar who scored the most points or LeBron who's the modern guy or that it's not going to be, you know, some dude 5 years from now who right now is in eighth grade that nobody knows about and that he's coming up. Like, it's all subjective and all of that stuff. So the texters are like, oh, we don't want to hear about LeBron right now. Move on. LeBron's not even in those guys' class. That's just totally ridiculous. Like, Michael Jordan wouldn't say that. Kobe wouldn't say that. No basketball player would say that LeBron isn't a peer, talent-wise, impact-wise, or whatever, on all of them. But how is that a knock?
And that's like, that's the whole point
of this
conversation.
I never got why praising LeBron was a knock on Jordan, I guess is my point.
That's the larger point of all of this, is that you can appreciate the greatness of LeBron because he learned stuff from guys that came before him, and it goes on and on and on. So there's a little bit of Jordan in LeBron. You know, there's a little bit of Kobe in LeBron. You know, so that's kind of the whole point of this, is just to appreciate what we have. You know, and not, you know, sort of nitpick because you don't like a guy. You know, LeBron's legacy is going to be complicated. You know, it's not like Kobe or Jordan who spent most of their careers with one team. You know, LeBron's going to be a little bit different. And because of that, naturally, he kind of irritated a lot of fans along the way in a lot of cities and cities that teams that he played against and cities that he didn't want to play for during that whole 2010 debacle. But yeah, that the point is, you know, appreciate guys like LeBron now because of what they learned from guys that came before them. And I think LeBron, if he hasn't done so already, he'll admit later on, you know, when he's near the end, like, actually he kind of did with Kobe, you know, when he played that game in Philly before Kobe's passing. It was just a couple days before, and he talked about the influence Kobe had on him. So, you know, it all connects.
It was,
man,
the day before.
Yeah.
He talked to Kobe the day before the helicopter went down because he passed him on the all-time scoring list. And the impact that Kobe had on LeBron. Yeah, absolutely, man. Like, that's what it is. And these debates, they're fun. Trust me. Like, I love them too. It's just, and you argue these things that are unanswerable and are subjective passionately because that's what sports fans do. We live for that sort of thing. But at the end of the day, if you love basketball and you can't acknowledge LeBron's greatness and Kobe's greatness and Jordan's greatness as being able to all be equally true, like, that's fine. Like, you're just harming yourself and your basketball ability. Like, it's ridiculous. So, like, say you have Jordan as the best basketball player of all time, and you have LeBron as the sixth best basketball player of all time, and you have Kobe as the ninth best basketball player of all time. How is it in any way, shape, or form an insult to one or the other guys if you have those inversed or flipped around, or someone else is like, you know what, I actually think it goes LeBron, then Jordan, then Kobe third, and then someone has it in a different order. Like, who cares? They're all awesome. They're all great. They all meant a ton to the teams that they played on. And people take any little thing and say, okay, you know, LeBron, he played for multiple teams, so that influences it. All right, Jordan played for multiple teams. Jordan stopped playing multiple times. Like, none of these guys have perfect legacies because they're human beings. No one's perfect. And Jordan lost in the playoffs before he got to the finals.
And another thing I enjoy about all this Last Dance stuff is, you know, I think it was the NBA Twitter last night was replaying 94 Phoenix Suns playoff game where Barkley dropped like 50. And if you're watching Barkley in that game, you know, there was this whole thing about Draymond Green versus Barkley and Draymond, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, but you're watching Barkley in this game drop 50 points on a good team in the playoffs. He's shooting threes, you know, he's doing everything you can do on a basketball court. And it was a guy that was Barkley's size. Like, people should remember Charles Barkley was no punk. Like, you kind of see him as, like, you know, NBA's grandpa now, you know, and he's, you know, he's got these opinions and takes, and he says silly things every once in a while, but you sort of see him as like a, as the comic relief on basketball post game. But this
yeah,
guy,
you forget he was awesome.
He was awesome. Yeah.
Well, listen, Barkley never winning a title and then his media career arguably being better than his playing career, which is incredible given that he's a top 50 player of all time, no question, is what makes it a little diluted. And then he's the exact guy that we're talking about, because he will go on there, like in the midst of the Warriors run, and be like, you just can't build a team by jump shooting. And it's like, but I'm watching them win championships right now by jump shooting. What are you talking about? And so like he's that guy that will, you know, talk about his era. And that's just, people do that. People will talk about their era, again, of music, of radio, of sports, of whatever, and you just always, I walked uphill in the snow both ways to school because these youngins don't know what they have, and it's so easy for the kids nowadays, and the youth of America are ruining it with this hip-hop and this metal and this rock and roll and this Elvis Presley. Like, every generation has done that, and so sports fans doing it, it's like, all right, we can watch this documentary, and we can realize, like, Jordan was incredible. He was the greatest. But to say that there was always awesome defense in the 90s is just factually inaccurate. Or that he never missed a big shot, or that he never had a bad game. It's just factually inaccurate. He was human. He just went 6-0 in the finals, and it's been really entertaining to relive this thing. But many people can have greatness and be appreciated. And the basketball players, the great ones, they all will say those comparisons are pointless, because it's relative to their time and era, and they all stole things and adapted and evolved from one another. So good stuff pointing it out that we should have gotten to that from Kobe yesterday. It was cool to see him on camera, and it's why I loved Kobe. It's why I loved Kobe from the beginning, because I was like, man, this is an extension of my childhood. I know that Mike can't be Mike anymore, but this is the closest thing, and I'll take him. I've used the Michael Keaton movie, the terrible movie Multiplicity, with the cloning. The first clone, basically the exact same guy. A little meaner, a little worse version, but 96% Michael Keaton. By the fourth or fifth clone, the dude's eating a dolphin. But that Kobe was the 96%. What'd you say?
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, sorry about that. But he was 4% of different from Michael. That was what Kobe was. The closest thing you'll ever get to Michael Jordan was Kobe Bryant. Coming up next, we are going to give you a sneak peek to the football take that I assume Hub will be shooting down at 4 o'clock, because this player is absolutely in the news today. It's next on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's going to go. Alvarez ties the game.
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Third and goal from inside the one. Game on the line. Allen under center. Takes it. Turns. Gore driving forward into the end zone. Touchdown! 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 Buffalo! Frank Gore drove his way into the end zone for the touchdown. And the Bills get the lead back again with a minute 50 to play.
Welcome back. Mac and Parkins on The Score. The segment brought to you by True Green. Mac off today. Hub Arkus joins me in 30 minutes. Dr. Citrenberg, the infectious disease expert, joins us 1 hour from now. I've got a lot of questions for both. But in addition to talking Foles v. Trubisky, the NFL schedule release, and more with Hub Arkus, I want to get his opinion on Frank Gore. And Hub is, he's not a Hall of Fame voter, but I continue to be surprised by the number of people who say Frank Gore is a shoe-in for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And we've talked about this on this show before, and I have all of the respect in the world for Frank Gore, but and I think that you can have all of the respect in the world for someone and simultaneously say, but I don't think they're a Hall of Famer. It's really hard to get into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. It's very similar to the conversation we were just having about how everyone incessantly wants to make it Kobe v. LeBron v. Jordan and make all of these comparisons to all of these guys. It's like, you can respect greatness, and praising and respecting LeBron doesn't take away from Michael Jordan. And this hit me about Frank Gore. You know those, like, the Dos Equis most interesting man in the world commercials? Or like Chuck Norris facts? I feel like that's where Frank Gore is going. And that is not in the football world cooler than being a Hall of Famer, but this stuff is the stuff of legend. I'm just not quite sure, based on the criteria for Canton, that it's going to get him in. And let me explain. Like, Frank Gore, the things you can say about him are pretty remarkable. He turns 37 later this month. It will be his 16th year. He had interest from multiple teams, ends up signing with the Jets. Even though he just had 599 rushing yards last year on 166 carries with only two touchdowns. He's third all-time on the NFL rushing list. 1,380 yards behind Walter Payton for second all-time. So he probably needs two more healthy seasons to pass Walter Payton and only trail Emmitt Smith for second all-time. But I've talked about with LeBron how that guy might be trying to play until his son Bronny is eligible for the NBA. Frank Gore Jr. is going to be a freshman at Southern Miss this year. Like, that's a Chuck Norris fact. You're like, wait, what? Players in the NFL don't play long enough for their children to play major college football at the same time they're still in the NFL. It's wild. And my argument against Frank Gore for the Hall of Fame has always been pretty simple. To me, for the Hall of Fame, you have to be the best or among the best at your position for a sustained period of time. And Frank Gore, other than his second year in the league when he had 1,695 rushing yards and was a second-team All-Pro, he was never that. He did make the All-Decade team for the 2010s, which surprised me a little bit. But he was a five-time Pro Bowler, one second-team All-Pro, third all-time in NFL rushing yards, but despite being third all-time in rushing yards, 21st all-time in rushing touchdowns. Guess how many double-digit touchdown seasons Frank Gore had? I don't know if, Shep, are you with me? Do you have his Pro Football Reference page up? If you do, don't pull it up. I'm curious if the Elias Shep Bureau, if you would know any of these stats.
I'm going to guess low. I'll say four.
One. One double-digit touchdown season for Frank Gore. Seasons with more than 1,250 rushing yards. I already gave you the one, the second year in the league where he had 1,695. How many other years did Frank Gore have more than 1,250 rushing yards?
Two more.
Zero.
Oh, well, that's not good.
He was really good and really healthy. Like, those would be the arguments against him. No first-team All-Pros, only one double-digit touchdown season, and it was 10, so obviously the minimum. Only one season over 1,250 rushing yards. But, in terms of consistency, how many seasons over 1,000 for Frank Gore in 16 years? He's played 15 years. This will be 16.
Yeah, it can't be many because he hasn't done it for quite some time now. I'll say half of them.
Nine. So nine okay. of his 15, which is pretty damn good.
Yeah.
And then to me, these next two things are like the Chuck Norris facts, the most interesting man in the world football facts for Frank Gore. Of 15 years in the NFL, How many of those 15 seasons did Frank Gore play in 14 or more games?
Probably just about all of them. Because remember, he came out of Miami, and he was the one that you couldn't take because, oh, he had no knees left. He had all the ACL injuries, but he's been remarkably healthy. I'll say, you said, what was the number, 14 or more?
14 or more games in of his 15 seasons. How many of those 15 years did he miss two games or fewer?
Two of them. Three. I'll say three.
14 of 15 seasons.
Holy smokes.
He played in 14 or more games. And then you mentioned the second one. His second ACL tear was in 2003 when he was still at the U. So, third all-time in rushing yards, playing with 9 seasons over 1,000 yards, 14 games or more, 14 of 15 years, when he had had 2 ACL reconstruction surgeries before he even entered the NFL, is truly the stuff of legend. Like, the boogeyman hides in the closet from Chuck Norris. Like, the unbelievable type stuff that doesn't even seem real. But then I give you 1 double-digit touchdown season, no first-team All-Pros. Edgerrin James and Corey Dillon have more rushing touchdowns than him. Like, I just, he never was elite for a period of time. And I know it's not fair to use the baseball compiler argument against him, because being a compiler in football, especially at that violent position, is a different thing, right? Availability is a commodity. Health is a commodity. And that dude always answered the bell. I don't know many guys that get into the Hall of Fame because of that in football. And it's really damn hard to make the Pro Football Hall of Fame. We talk to Dan Pompey about it every year. So we'll see how this one goes. But to me, Frank Gore is a fascinating conversation, because even though, like, I don't think Eli Manning will make it, he's got the last name, he's got the market, and he's got the Super Bowl MVPs. Frank Gore doesn't have great playoff success, great playoff moments, historic franchise. Like, yeah, he was with the Niners for a long time, but in terms of, like, not when they were very good. So I personally would not put Frank Gore in the Hall of Fame. What about you?
Well, I just think I think with football, that football is incredibly hard to get into the Hall of Fame. I mean, you referenced Dan Pompey and the conversations you guys had about T.O. and various other players over the years. But the part to me that football kind of differentiates a little bit is that, like, you look at baseball, Minnie Minoso. If it was strictly a compiling Hall of Fame, Minnie Minoso would be a surefire Hall of Famer. You'd have other guys that get in, and ultimately, like, Harold Baines went in last year, and you can argue all day, all night long for reasons that he shouldn't be a Hall of Famer, and so he kind of speaks against my case here. But, like, take, for example, either Jerome Bettis or Curtis Martin. Both very good running backs. Both stuck around for a very long time, played on some successful teams. Did Martin when he came up with the Patriots before getting traded to the Jets. And Bettis, obviously, his final year when the Steelers win the Super Bowl, and the stories of him, of he's going home one last time to Detroit, and they win the Super Bowl in his last game. But those two, when you go back and kind of look at their numbers, it wasn't like there was any greatness for an extended amount of time. Martin had 1 All-Pro appearance. Bettis had 2, and I know we're talking about Frank Gore, and he's not in that territory of even the All-Pro appearances. But just in terms of, like, pure dominance or who you thought of during those guys' eras, you thought of Barry Sanders. You thought of Emmitt Smith as the best running backs in the league for most of those two's careers. You didn't think of Bettis. You didn't think of Martin, and both of them are in. So I think that based off of that is where I go kind of with Frank Gore of, okay, yeah, he might not ever been the best thing going at a given time, but the fact that you did it for 13, 14 years, going on 15 years, that says a lot to me, and I'd be surprised if he's not in Canton before long.
Yeah, it's funny. It's two conversations. Do I think he will get in? Yes. Do I think he should? No. It's at the end of the day, it's going to be hard to argue against third all-time in rushing yards, right? When the list is Emmitt Smith, Walter Payton, Frank Gore, Barry Sanders, it's going to be tough. Like, that's a great argument for inclusion. But unlike those guys, whether it's Emmitt Smith and the Super Bowls and Walter Payton and Barry Sanders for just the absolute undeniable individual brilliance, breathtaking runners, that was never Frank Gore. Like, he just, the guy was there, and he was solid, and he was good, and he was competitive, and he was healthy year in and year out. And it's remarkable. Like, it is a remarkable career that he is 37 years old, coming off a year where he didn't have 600 rushing yards, and he was consistent enough that a team wants him to come in and play for him, even if it is the New York Jets, and he's got a son who's going to be a freshman in college, and he's never missed more than two games except for one time. Like, it's an incredible career. But I feel like it's not even Hall of Very Good. It's like there's the Hall of Fame, there's the Hall of Very Good, and then there's Frank Gore. Like, he's just this... he's just this other unbelievable, worthy thing of being celebrated. But I think that there's 20 running backs that have had better, like, that were more talented than Frank Gore. If you were doing it based on actual talent, you'd have guys way above Frank Gore in terms of the Hall of Fame. And that's how I would judge it. Greatness relative to their era. Marshall Faulk, better running back than Frank Gore. Frank Gore's got better stats, would just be one example.
Yeah, I mean, there's plenty of those guys. Like, Adrian Peterson... he's not going to get Frank Gore's numbers in terms of all-time rush yards. Adrian Peterson, you can make an argument, as talented a running back as there's ever been in the NFL.
AP, no doubt, first ballot Hall of Famer. No question
correct.
About it.
Like, yeah. There's plenty of those guys, whether it's the start of Frank Gore's career that were kind of – that guys were winding down then, or guys that have played during Frank Gore's – I mean, how many times do you look at Frank Gore during his run and be like, yep, he's one of the top two or three that there were? I mean –
I think you do it all. Yeah, I think his second year in the league, that Niners team that was really good, and he had nearly 1,700 rushing yards. You're like, oh man, this guy's going to be a superstar for a long time. And then he just was solid for a really long time, which again, in that sport, is an accomplishment all of its own. But he's in the news today. He signed with the Jets. It's a career worthy of celebration. I wouldn't put him in Canton. I got someone who absolutely...
I could, but I don't really want to argue with you one way or the other. I don't think...
We'll see if Hub wants to debate it coming up at 4 o'clock. Dr. Sitchenberg at 4:30. An offshoot character in The Last Dance who deserves their own documentary. Next on The Score.
Do you have a gambling problem?
No, I enjoy it. It's a hobby. If I had a problem, I'd be starving. I'd be hawking this watch. My championship rings, I would sell my house. I would do this. My wife would left me on. She'd be starving. My kids would be starving. I do not have a problem. I enjoy gambling.
Now, it didn't help that Michael had sunglasses on when he was doing the interview. Let me take them sunglasses off.
A classic moment in The Last Dance. Thanks for hanging out. It's Mac and Parker's on The Score. Mac off today. We'll talk to Hub coming up in 10 minutes. To the texter who says that I'm wrong and Frank Gore was better than Adrian Peterson, and Adrian Peterson not top 10. Okay. Adrian Peterson led the league in rushing three times. Has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Has 9 double-digit touchdown seasons compared to 1 for Frank Gore. And has a 2,000-yard season and is 4th all-time in rushing touchdowns. Like, that one ain't close. You can have Frank Gore in the Hall of Fame. That's close. Frank Gore over Adrian Peterson is absolutely not close. But I had some nostalgia in The Last Dance, not in the same place that everybody else was talking about. Because, of course, Jordan, Phil, Scotty, Dennis, anger towards the Bad Boys Pistons, anger at Jerry Krause. Like, that is the amount of nostalgia that we're all sharing in. But anyone else having some nostalgia for NBA Inside Stuff? Because I know that there's still a version of it on NBA TV that Grant Hill's involved in and Steve Smith and all of that. But Ahmad Rashad asking MJ when he's in Barcelona with the golf clubs, hey, on this team, who would take the last shot? And he looks at him with that incredulous look, me. The sweaters, the shirts, the logos, everything about it. Like, it was just, it was the greatest. Tanny and I were talking during the break. Willow Bay, Ahmad Rashad, the 90s, NBA on NBC. Marv Albert would show up and narrate stuff, that music. Oh, it was just the greatest. And
I did have a little bit of that moment where, you know, getting back to the old, you know, stuff was better back then. listening to Marv call those Bulls-Knicks games, I mean, Marv is still a gold standard, right?
Yes, yes. Voice of the NBA, Marv Albert. Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. I know ESPN does a great job, and ABC, they do a great job now, but it's still Marv, right? It's got to be.
It is still Marv. It is absolutely still Marv. And I know you're biased.
You're incredibly biased, I'm sure.
Of course.
As most people in our industry who graduated from Syracuse, but
yeah. Marv, but like he's not even, you know, for the Cuse thing, like he's on the list, but he's not present like Tirico and Costas and Ian Eagle and McDonough and those guys are. Like Marv Albert doesn't come back to Syracuse very often. Like, you know, I never saw him in my 4 years there, whereas those other guys I probably saw 20 total times. Like he's on the list and he's the Hall of Famer and all of that. But to me, it's just the NBA on NBC.
Yeah. I mean, the music, the John Tesh music, Round Ball Rock.
Incredible.
That's as good as society will ever get.
I agree. Like, that point, we're right. Like, back in our day, the NBA on NBC was the greatest. And Ahmad Rashad, and I know that, you know, you could say, oh, he's just a jock sniffer and then he's just with his friendship with Mike or whatever. Who cares? It led to some compelling television. And there was a picture going around on the internet that I'm sure I had seen, but because of, you know, medicinal choices, you forget about it. Ahmad Rashad has been married 5 times and divorced 4. But one of his former wives, his ex-wives, was Felicia Ayers Allen, who was an actress on The Cosby Show. His wife at the time. So there is a picture, because Ahmad Rashad, who, by the way, want to feel old, 70 years old. And black don't crack. Does not look it at all. And you forget, you know him from being Jordan's friend and NBA on NBC and Inside Stuff. This was a 4-time Pro Bowler, one of the 50 greatest Vikings of all time in the Minnesota Vikings Ring of Honor, NFL player. This was a legitimate football player, went to the University of Oregon, big-time player. He was roommates with O.J. Simpson.
Hey, Twitter world, it's me, yours truly.
That's right. So there is a picture from one of his weddings, I believe his 3rd wedding, when he married the actress from The Cosby Show, where Bill Cosby is giving her away to Ahmad Rashad, who is standing next to his best man, O.J. Simpson. So the picture is O.J. Simpson, Ahmad Rashad, Bill Cosby. Shep, I know we've tried, but maybe the mob, someone out there has a connection. I want Ahmad Rashad for Score Stories. Like, this dude just left media to be Michael Jordan's friend and smoke cigars and play golf and, like, count his money. I have so many questions for the life and times of Ahmad Rashad. Would you not? So I just watched that 60-minute documentary on Alex Smith and his recovery from leg surgery. Would you not watch 60 Minutes on Ahmad Rashad Stories? Because I am in.
I would just watch for the old NBA Inside Stuff clips. I mean, if you were of that age, of our age, where you can watch NBA Inside Stuff during the Jordan era every Saturday morning, there's nothing like it. It's really the peak time to be a kid in America, I believe. It was a great show. It really was.
It really was.
You had just Slam Magazine, NBA Inside Stuff, NBA and NBC. Oh, that's all you need.
Yeah. I would love it. And we don't even, you know, it'd be hard not to ask an OJ question, but like, think of the things that guy has seen just being friend of the stars from the NFL, first round draft pick, Cosby Show, NBA on NBC, OJ Simpson, Michael Jordan, Ahmad Rashad. Score Stories Hall of Famer, and he hasn't even been on yet. Hub shoots down my theories, and we discuss if the NFL is about to make a big mistake with the release of their schedule coming up on Thursday. It's next on The Score.
I can't, but I don't really want to argue with you one way or the other. I don't think...
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.